This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Eita, good morning, good evening, depending on where in the world you are. Welcome to another episode of Hashtag Politics with Botsang Modimoame Moilwa. It's been quite an interesting last couple of weeks politically in South Africa and in the world. But it seems like the dust is settling. Guys are getting into their offices. A lot of buildings have that new minister smell. a lot of offices have that new minister energy. Gayton is walking in there, guns blazing. And I think generally there's a nice energy. It almost feels like everyone understands that there's a lot at stake and we need to deliver. And they're all making the right noises so far.
Yeah. Good morning, Brother Fresh.
Morning,
good morning,
brother.
To the followers and the viewers. Yes. I've picked up a positive energy.
Yes, sir.
It's a little bit calmer, than the 2 or 3 weeks towards the formation of the government of national unity.
Sure.
But also, I've observed how this newly appointed and sworn in ministers have actually started talking about their work, and they've left their political party jackets, a little bit on the side or behind.
Sure.
Which is something that they're supposed to be doing. I hope it continues that way. On top of that, we also saw the Gauteng provincial government appointing its executive authority and leaving the Democratic Alliance out.
So in essence, is this them forming a so-called minority government?
Yes, they formed what Panyanza Lusufi did is that he formed a minority government. You remember I explained before that the constitution makes provision for that.
Absolutely.
And I don't know why nationally the ANC didn't go there because they had the numbers. But he was very strategic. What he did is he waited for a consensus in the provincial legislature to appoint him to be the premier without, any challenge or any hiccups.
Sure.
So, like I said, he has been smart.
They duped the DA?
They duped. Look, once he ascended there, he knew that in Gauteng, one, he is the chairperson of the ANC in Gauteng. That's the first part.
Okay.
So he wouldn't go and charge himself that he and fire himself. He also taught the line of the position of the ANC in Gauteng. He was talking that line. And he had a backing of his executive committee of Gauteng, the PEC. He had the support of the PEC. Then he took the matter to the provincial legislature where nobody contested him. Even from other political parties, nobody put their name up. So everybody supported him. Once he had consolidated that support and asserted himself very well as the premier of the province, then he was supposed to present, and the DA cried and they went to the president and he got a call from Luthuli House. He came back and he announced the cabinet.
What is he saying in essence then to National?
Look, Fresh, before I try and answer what Panyaza is saying is, I said the memorandum of intent or letter of intent was signed at national level.
Sure.
And in my view, and I've said it last week and the week before, it must not be pushed into the throats of the provinces, even if we had provincial elections.
Okay.
And we saw that what happened at national did not happen in the Western Cape. So what Panyaza is saying to national and to the argument above is that if you can let the Democratic Alliance, which has the majority in the Western Cape, to do what they want to do without filtering in the GNU letter of intent, why don't you let us in Gauteng to do what we want to do? And I think the delays in announcing and him being called by Luthuli House and Helen Zille going into the public and crying out loud, he just ignored it and he put his foot down.
What of the argument that in the Western Cape they had an outright majority? So they won 50 plus one, so they can do as they please there? Or are you saying that whatever the agreement is at national should filter across every province?
If you want to use it at provinces, let it be across the board. It should not be selectively.
Okay.
If you have an agreement, you have a national agreement, even in KwaZulu-Natal, actually, look at what happened in KwaZulu-Natal. None of the parties there are the leading political parties in KZN. But what did they do? They did as they wish. Western Cape could have extended an olive branch to the ANC.
To say we are part of a GNU.
To say we are part of the government of national
so
unity.
So send one or two guys.
Exactly. Now Panyaza has the support of other people.
Sure.
And his MECs or his executive and other political parties which are not members of the GNU.
Mm.
Like the EFF controversy, they said they will stand by him. My only fear I have is that we are going to see the DA most probably in Gauteng, trying to come with the motions of no confidence in Panyaza.
Becoming a national, they'll become the official opposition.
Official opposition, but it's okay. Look, they are almost neck on neck with the ANC with numbers.
Yeah.
And they will need what is it about 33 each?
Sure.
They will need about 17%. Who of the political parties in the Gauteng legislature is going to support the DA? I doubt it. I don't think any of those can do that. But also, what Panyaza did is to also bring, Arise Mzansi,
sure.
as well as Bosa, and gave them a position. So he has consolidated power very well.
What of risk of instability within Gauteng because of this impasse they had with the DA and then Panyaza going it without the DA?
Look, I don't think there'll be instability, like I said, due to the numbers.
Mm.
The numbers that the ANC has from other political parties, unless controversies were part in the EFF, they go against Panyaza. But Panyaza has built a very solid relationship with the EFF in Gauteng.
Mm.
And I think generally political parties in Gauteng, they like him. And I don't see any instabilities. It's going to be very minimal if it happens. It's going to be to an extent the way it happened
sure.
in local government. But they must be very careful. Should they try and destabilize Gauteng, it may impact on the agreement in KwaZulu-Natal.
Mm.
Because the provincial government in KZN or the IFP can say to the DA, but you are destabilizing. Remember, IFP also got a seat. You are destabilizing
sure.
and disturbing us and the flow of things in Gauteng. Therefore, we'll do it in KZN. I don't think any of the political parties in KwaZulu-Natal, they want to play that game because their intention was to keep Umkhonto a party out.
Sure.
And it will take one vote, to can flip the whole thing. So I think Gauteng will be very stable. That's what transpired in the last week. I think Panyaza heard us last week when we said, take a position, be firm, and be decisive. Those
Absolutely.
Who are angry yeah. will see them next week. The same as at national ministers. As you said in your opening remarks, they are now settled.
Mm.
They are settling down in slowly. They sound happy, all of them.
Mm.
I listened to the Minister of Public Works and Public Works.
Mm.
From the Democratic Alliance talking about how he's going to tighten the budget, no luxuries, and he went to an extent of even out of his pocket buying glasses for his office. He said, I didn't find glasses in my office.
Mm.
I took money, I went into one of the famous supermarkets, I bought standard glasses, no crystalware and things like that. And we also heard a lot about Gated McKenzie, from his statement that those who received money of arts and culture or activities, and the third one that took up the news, it was the Mama Joy,
sure.
the not so joy of Gated McKenzie, to say this thing of sponsoring Mama Joy and fans. Actually, he didn't single out her.
Yeah.
Is that those fans that were flying around the world?
Yeah. Well, so what are your thoughts on Minister McKenzie saying that, listen, anyone that's ever been funded by the department, we need a list to know who has funded, for how much, and why? What are your thoughts on that?
Is it
grandstanding or is it the right thing to do?
First of all, and I'll talk about it from the public administration perspective,
yeah.
not politics. It's public monies.
Sure.
It's accountability. We have to know where our monies go, our
Absolutely.
Taxes go.
Sure.
And it does happen in government that people publicize how they spend their money. They will say, we spend on vehicles, we spend on this, we spend. You remember that department at some stage, they had to publicize and get permission to can erect that flag that was going to cost
the flag pole.
The flag pole.
That was supposed to bring us together.
Yes.
Okay.
And that was in a public. So why leave others out? Why leave other expenditures out?
Sure.
I'm not talking about whether it's artists or sports people.
Mm.
It's government expenditure, it's public coffers.
Where's the money gone?
Where is the
and
money
why?
Gone? Yes, and why?
And why is some of it going to the same people all the time?
I think it's one of the things that Minister McKenzie, it's so difficult for me.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's so weird. he's a minister.
Minister Gated. Lord Gated. Yeah. We call him Lord Gated.
Yes, so I think it's part of it is accountability.
Sure.
But Fresh, there's been an outcry. You are in the arts industry. Mm. You will know better than me. There's been an outcry. Even in sports, I'm a follower of soccer. I'm a follower of boxing. I've seen how a lot of so-called stars, were not benefiting, and some went bankrupt. And when we have a ministry that is supposed to be taking care of those people, yes, we have cases.
But there's a budget to send cases. Fans. But there's budgets for fans.
And look, budget
but Butsang,
for fans,
who's got national colours in Taekwondo, must pay for himself to go compete internationally.
Those are some of the challenges.
For me, it's a problem.
I've got a friend whose daughter competed in what you call gymnast. She's an international gymnast and competed in Korea about 2-3 years back.
Sure.
We had to fundraise, we had to donate money. Mm. I had to send messages around so that she can fly to. And I was asking myself at that time, if we had a superstar like that who was competing internationally, where is the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture? Because those are some of the people you're supposed to take care of. And I think this corrective measure, publicizing the benefactors of arts, sports, and culture monies, it is going to aid us as a nation to be able to say, but we are spending too much money on Mr. X instead of distributing it evenly to all other deserving artists.
And often it's to the disadvantage of the very same kids that when they win gold somewhere or they become a world champion, all of a sudden there's a whole big thing at the airport, our child has won, child has won.
Exactly.
But this is the same child that has been begging for money.
Exactly.
Saying, listen, I can't even get decent diet to prepare me for a world stage. There's a guy I used to sponsor. He's a karateka. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I remember he was invited to, I think it was the All Japan Championship.
Yes.
They only invite 10 fighters from around the world, the last I checked.
And one was
so
South
it's
Africa.
The best fighters in Japan.
Yes.
And then they invite a handful. He was one of them.
Yeah.
You know that he couldn't get sponsorship. I had to get him flights to Japan. I had to make sure that I pay for his food. He came in the top 10 at the All Japan
Championships. Yeah.
So in other words, of all the people in Japan, there was a big fight. There'd be 10 people standing, he'd be one of them.
Yeah.
I had to pay out of my own pocket to get this kid to Japan because he couldn't get money from government.
For me, it's accountability. It's openness with public monies.
Mm.
It's equal distribution of resources.
Sure.
There are resources that come from taxes.
Mm.
Whether it's government events or national colors. I looked this past weekend, everybody was celebrating on how KB Mutsilenyane, performed the national anthem very well.
She killed it.
And people were like, and she is very proud of what she did.
Mm.
It was for the national team of rugby. And some people were like, she should be the official person performing the national anthem. You see now, I loved her. I loved her performance.
Yeah.
But I'm saying,
There's other singers. Yeah.
If we are using state coffers, there's other singers who somebody can say, but what about the other person?
Exactly.
And
let's give Ras Dumisan a second chance. Maybe he'll improve.
Okay, that one you will.
We don't write people off, Butsang.
Give him another opportunity.
Another opportunity to redeem himself. It's called redemption.
Okay, my brother.
Matthews. Let's give him another chance to redeem himself.
I get it. But what I like about Gaty McKenzie, and you have said it last week, he's a doer.
Yeah.
He's running with his soccer or rugby boots on.
Mm.
I saw him. He went to an art gallery in Kagiso.
Sure.
And Fresh. And
oh yeah, that's your hood. That's your hood.
That's my hood.
Yeah.
Now you know what he did there. Mm. He found art. You know, those artists, you must see their artwork.
Mm.
Some of them said they had to sell the artwork so cheap so that they can afford to go and buy bread and food and even a taxi to go home.
Sure.
Artwork.
Mm.
And his salary that is donating to some foundation in the Western Cape for that young girl who was murdered.
Mm.
He said the first one, because the lawyers are still drafting the documents for that foundation, the first one of this month of July, that is his first salary, he's diverting it to that art gallery and those artists in Kagiso.
Sure.
Just once off, so that they can get a kickstart. Understand? And like I said...
So for instance, I mean, you look at that what he's doing with the art gallery in the West Rand. I mean, what stops him saying to Derko that we are going to source artists that are going to provide artworks for every embassy out there, so that when people walk into South African embassy, they see South African artworks from people who are coming up, that we have said we will buy your artwork for you. There's opportunities to collaborate
and
support artists.
That's very close to my heart.
As an ambassador, yes.
As part of my duty as a diplomat and head of corporate services, particularly.
Yes, sir.
Because we didn't have cultural attaches.
Mm.
So the responsibility of cultural was residing in my office.
Yes, sir.
I can quote almost every South African musician, black and white, that I insisted during my reign at all embassies that I've served, from Vusimahlasela, groups called Kutu,
yes,
Bradon Lack, and others, various, that I insisted that for as long as I'm at a diplomatic mission, only South African artists will come and perform at on a South African event. I would get SAA that time to fly those artists and the band to the event of the embassy. Their SNT, you know, a subsistence allowance will come from the embassy coffers. But we didn't stop there. We went exactly what you are saying. In the diplomatic missions I have served in, if it's still there today, you can go and check. I had to remove old apartheid era artwork. Even if it was good artwork that belonged to the state, send it back to public works or to the art library, and hanged artwork that was designed by South Africans. And that's what we should do. We have over 110 diplomatic missions in the world.
Yeah.
And they each have an average of 10 houses. If it's small ones, it's 5. Imagine if those diplomatic homes and offices or chancery can be decorated with purely South African art, how much money we can distribute. I think you have just given Gaten an idea of, you know, approaching other departments like Derko, who can be able to can do that. Those are some of the things that, you know, we can sell to government to say, look, you don't have to go and sell artwork in the street. The government must buy from
the
people.
They must buy your artwork.
And that's how you sponsor the people. That's how you stimulate the economy.
And how many government offices are there in the country?
Yes, yes, exactly.
There's enough artists that you can support by just simply buying the artworks.
Exactly. You understand? We always laugh and we like the artwork of, who's that artist in KZN who always draws people funny?
Oh, Rasta.
And all that. I mean, that's a totally different form of artwork. And again, you know, I think the arts and culture must try and move away from us celebrating people only when they've passed on, only when they are dead, you know, only when they are suffering and lying in hospital beds without medical aid or insurance. Then we start saying, hey, the department can step in and fund people when they are at the prime of their career, aid them, assist them, guide them, and have programs that can assist our artists and sportsmen. It was men and women as well, you know. So I think Gaten is on the right track.
I'm looking at a tweet here from Minister of Public Works, Dean McPherson. He says, I've decided to take the public into confidence and advise South Africa that at least 300 million rand has been stolen from the department in the past 10 years in an elaborate scheme by cyber hackers and potentially officials within the department. It is unthinkable that this has gone on for so long without being noticed. In order to build trust in South Africans, we must be transparent about the problems we face. We will ensure that financial controls are tightened and we hold those responsible accountable for their actions. I will continue to update you when more information becomes available.
Yeah. Another minister is doing it. I've heard about that story during the course of the week, but I must actually give credit to Sihle Sikalala, who's the former minister, is now the deputy.
Sure.
He started investigating this thing in 2023.
Yeah.
It's not a new news, you know, it didn't come out now, but he's intensifying it now, and there's the Hawks state security agencies involved, and many other, you know, NPAs involved in this thing. Look, it has been happening for 10. I don't think it was not detected. I think those who were corrupt officials that are somehow on suspension, about 62 of them, it's a lot. I think they were so organized that every time there was a leak, they will close it. That's why many of them,
yes,
understand,
yes, yes,
that
yes.
They were so, it came from within. It's not just cyber hacking. It was corrupt officials.
Yeah, it's not a random group of hackers.
No, it's not a random group of people sitting somewhere in a dilapidated flat in Hillbro hacking the department. It was officials who were doing that. And I think thumbs up to Sihle Kalala and the current minister, McPherson, to say, they are going public with this, but when is Gaiety McKenzie who's asking to go public with such, people are opposing it. And that's why I have a problem with the Democratic Alliance, to say when it is their minister or public official doing something, then it's okay. But when it's the others, it's not okay. And I have a challenge with that. This is a general public face. It's our monies, it's our taxes, it's our resources, and we should hold every public servant accountable for such resources or wastage thereof.
Absolutely. So let's, before we change angle a bit, there's also been a lot happening in Parliament and the portfolio. Committees. With former judge Dr. Chope.
Yes, yes.
Obviously, he's in one of the committees, the judiciary.
The committee that fired him, that recommended his dismissal.
Yeah, so the committee that basically impeached him.
Yes.
And he's saying, but I'm not a judge, guys. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm not a judge, I'm a politician now.
Yes.
So what's the problem?
Well, people are talking ethics. And again, it was brought up by one of the Justice Law Foundation of Society.
In fact, I think they wanted to take this matter up.
Yes, they are threatening to take it up if he gets, you know, if he remains there.
Yeah.
But also the Democratic Alliance made noise. Unfortunately for them, they miscalculated. Again, double standards don't work. And I argued with somebody, I'll make an example. I argued with somebody this week who was saying to me, and I'm not diverting, I'm just showing, to say Gaiety McKenzie is a thug or is a former thug, and we glorify thugs. And I'm like, but what happened to, why do we have correctional services? Why do we have people who are rehabilitated? Are we saying those things don't work? Here is a classical example of rehab and correction.
And surely that should be your poster boy for the system works.
Exactly, the system works. Now, we have, before Dr. John Chope, we have one of the leading, and I actually don't like her politics, but I like her personality.
Okay.
The Breitenbach, Advocate Breitenbach of the DA.
Oh, she was dismissed, most.
She was fired.
Yeah.
She tried to appeal. She lost the appeal.
She lost the, she was fired by the NPA.
By the NPA, yes.
So she's not covered in glory.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And she filed for appeal. And she lost it, then she resigned. She's doing a great job. And now I'm talking about her work in that committee.
Sure.
The same committee which former Justice Chope or Dr. Chope is going to serve in.
Sure.
Understand? He has been impeached. I've been fired in government. Does it mean I'm dysfunctional, I can't be employed by government? I've been fired before. You understand? I got rehabilitated. I served my sentence. I came back. I performed and outclassed many who were sitting there who were never fired. And who said now Dr. Chope doesn't have a life after being impeached? Who says he can't perform his duties after being impeached? People are talking of ethics to say that committee, it is now going to be sitting with a bunch of people who are unethical. And luckily for them, Julius Malema went there himself. If I was Julius, I would have actually deployed Busisiwe Mkhwebane in there because she was also impeached. You know, Breitenbach, Busisiwe Mkhwebane, Dr. Chope, and everybody else.
So basically what you're saying is what? Whether or not the ethics and the optics say what they say, as long as you're in parliament,
you are a politician.
You're a
now.
Politician.
You are a politician. I come back as a politician. If I get dismissed from my employment, you were dismissed from Metro. You understand? And why did it render you incapable of having your own host show like we are sitting now or performing? It doesn't make you render you an unwanted, a persona non grata in the country. Dr. Hlophe has paid his dues, he has lost his benefit, he has lost money, he has lost his title.
But we can't put him in a dustbin.
But we can't put him in a dustbin. I actually think the country needs his brains more than anything else in that committee. You see, their fear is he will use his presence in that committee to get back to
settle scores.
To settle scores. But I'm saying that committee consists of a number of people, about 11 people, plus minus.
Decisions are not in his hands.
They're not in his hands. He's actually not yet even appointed as the chair of that committee.
Sure.
But even if he becomes the chair or what, there's other members of that committee from various political parties. Why do they think that he will go there and control everybody in that committee? I think it's a very clumsy excuse, but when it suits other people. And you see, this is again the racial lines. I've mentioned Breitenbach and I've mentioned her good work. I like the way, you know, she talks the law. But because Breitenbach comes from the Democratic Alliance, is a woman, and she's white. Nobody said anything for all the years she's been serving in that committee. Nobody. So are we saying people who have been dismissed from their roles or impeached or anyhow, they should not come back and do anything for the nation, or they cannot continue with their life?
Especially if they have institutional knowledge, they've got experience, and they're probably going to bring more to the committee than anyone else that might replace them.
President Thabo Mbeki, President Jacob Zuma, they were recalled from their positions by their parties. Today, we still listen to President Mbeki and President Zuma than anybody else because of the institutional knowledge they possess, because of the wisdom they possess in politics. You understand? So I just think it's unjust for the justice people to can try and put people in the dustbin when they can be used wisely.
And also, where do we draw the line in terms of, we're talking matters of law. Now you want to come in, ka engilia, but is it
sociology and all that? Yes.
Exactly. Because surely, you know, issues of the law are about the law and nothing else. Unless we're saying because of morality and ethics, certain people should not be allowed into parliament, period.
Exactly.
Then let's have that conversation.
Let's have a conversation separately.
And then,
fire
half of them.
Exactly. Do you think it's half? I think it's more than half of them.
You know what I mean? Then let's have that conversation. But as long as a person at a political level can get into parliament, that's what it is.
Exactly. And again, we have politicians who have faced criminal charges, corruption charges, and all that. The former chairperson of that committee is facing criminal charges or allegations of crime committed and corruption. You understand? So let the law take its course when the law has to be applied. Let the courts rule and decide. We have them, whether they decide in our favor or they bring decisions that we are not comfortable with.
Sure.
Their purpose is to make those decisions. And you know, I don't know why South Africans like to attack individuals when our constitution,
I was going to say,
it's the supreme law.
It's a constitution issue here.
Exactly.
If you have a problem with the constitution, then
deal with the constitution. Deal with the constitution.
Because as long as she stands right now, she says the people there are allowed to be there.
Exactly. Exactly. And for me, that's it. I don't look at individuals. And sometimes people like to say, I like being on the side of the thugs, the corrupt.
No, the rebels.
I despise corruption. I despise crime. But if the law is unjust,
if the system is broken, let's fix the system.
Exactly. Fix the system.
Don't blame the person that came in through the broken window.
Exactly.
When the broken window is there, still broken.
Actually, you said Dr. Hlophe could be the poster boy. If I was a minister of correctional services.
Gayton.
I mean, Gayton, yes. Yeah. If I was a minister of correctional services, I will take Gayton as my cabinet colleague and say, colleague, can be a poster boy of showing how the system works.
Sure.
How we can rehabilitate people that you can stop being a thug, can become a minister. There's so many people. Our prisons are overcrowded.
Absolutely.
And we can use this as an example. We can use Dr. Hlophe to say he didn't go home and enjoy his pension and rest on his laurels. You know, he is, if I'm not wrong, He may be the most educated jurist in this country ever had. He was the youngest when he became a judge of the High Court in this country, the first black and the youngest in the Western Cape, 36, I think so, you know, way back in 1996. And why wouldn't we, you know, a sack from the knowledge of this person. We need him in parliament. Look, we made him. Mm. Yes, he studied, but we made him.
Sure.
So we need his skills. This is the opportunity.
He can still serve the country.
To can plow back into the country.
Mm. And if you have a problem with how the system works, fix the system.
Yeah, fix the system. There are 400 there. They can fix the system. 400 of them, they're sitting in front of the law. You know, this takes me to, I think, the courts this week, what transpired.
The road accident fund.
The road accident fund.
Oh, yeah, tell us, let's discuss that.
By the way, again, I must put a disclaimer that this has nothing to do with my employer.
Okay.
It's in the public space and who I serve. But that case, it's so sad. One, the CEO of...
okay, so what is the case with the road accident fund?
Is a friend. The case is, remember, we spoke about it sometimes last year.
Yeah.
That in South Africa, and this comes from, and I told people this week when they were crying about the court decision, it comes from the Freedom Charter. Mm. South Africa belongs to all who live in it. Mm-hmm. Then it went into the 1996 Constitution. The Constitution then informs all other acts.
Mm.
The Road Accident Fund Act, it says any person, that's the key, any person who gets involved in a road accident in South Africa, whether you are a foreigner, whether you are illegal here,
sure,
whether you jump the river through crocodiles or through the fence, whether you are a wanted fugitive in the world, if you get involved in an accident on the roads of South Africa, you are entitled to full benefits like any other person.
Compensation.
Yes, compensation. Mm. Now, the road accident fund, they didn't amend the act, and I think this is where they made a mistake.
Mm.
They used what we call in government management prerogative.
Okay.
With the minister prerogative. So the minister's powers and management of the RAF can sit and say, we are not changing the act because that means parliament, but we are applying our powers or powers vested in us to amend the processes, not the regulations, to say we are changing the form of claiming to say only people who are residents in South Africa
or here legally
or who are here legally. So they just try to change it on the form. Some NGOs and a group of about six foreign people, some of them are lawyers who own law firms, took them to court. They lost at the Pretoria High Court sometimes early this year, I think around April. The Road Accident Fund lost the case. And then they applied for leave to appeal. You remember the other time we explained that before you go and appeal, you must apply for leave to appeal. So what happened is the court did not grant them
the leave to appeal.
So it's case closed now.
Sure.
It ends here. There's no way they can go. But again, fresh, let me speak as both sound also from, you know, with a public administration background. I do not know why the legal advisors, and I read the judgment in full. I think the lawyers did a shabby job. And the judges said it was a full bench of judges in the Pretoria Court. They did a shabby job. They just copied what happened in the previous case. They didn't motivate why they want an appeal. So the court was saying you are not convincing.
Sure.
You understand? But also, I was wondering actually as I was driving to the studio this morning to say, why is the Road Accident Fund and the Minister of Transport not amending the act? Because the court is saying...
Because therein is the problem.
The problem is the act. The act is saying any person, amend the act. Yeah. Don't bring, you know, backdoor rules. Amend the act.
But amending the act means then there are people who are going to challenge that amendment at a constitutional level.
Yes, it's fine. But you have a whole 400 MPs. You motivate. And especially, this is an opportunity because the government of national unity at the moment.
And more so because when you go to other countries, you don't have that privilege.
Fresh, don't even go.
You're on your own. You're on your own.
Don't go far. I used to drive to Mozambique every other week.
Yeah.
Just Mozambique here next door.
Yeah.
You will not enter that country without giving evidence of personal insurance and vehicle insurance in case you get involved in a road accident in that country. All other countries do that. It's only us. Any person, which kind of lawmaker goes and write the word any person? I'm not a lawyer, but I will not use words loosely like that. Any person. Amend the Constitution, not the Constitution, amend the Act.
Sure.
But the courts are correct in this instance because the courts are saying What they want to do is against the constitution of the country. Mm. And I said, go and change your law. That's what the court is saying to the Road Accident Fund. Go and amend your act. First, they will oppose it, but embark on that process. Mm. Explain to, what do you call it, to members of parliament and political parties. This is the time to lobby, to say, the reason we want to embark is that it's hitting us on in a pocket. You know, and I've mentioned on this platform before, the person who has received the highest road accident claim in South Africa years back.
Wasn't it European?
UK, from United Kingdom.
I think it was on a motorbike in the Western Cape.
Yes,
or something.
He was here on holiday. You know, man, that person, that person was studying to be a medical doctor specialty and all that. Almost 500 million rands, one person. Mm. Yes, he was here legally, he was here on holiday and all that. But again, if we would have insisted that everybody who comes into our shores must have insurance, we would have saved 500 million.
I was going to say, in any other country, he would not have gotten away with it.
Yes, yes. But look, our constitution allows us, our Road Accident Fund Act allows that. Mm. So if I was the CEO of Road Accident Fund and the Minister of Transport, Mabel Brakrisi, go and amend that part, remove those weights and other things. There's others. You know, the other day I was telling somebody, and again, I must be very careful with this. Do you know some of the people who are defending this, I don't want to call it illegal, this unfair practice? And I'm not pointing fingers and I'm not saying names. It's farmers. Mm. People who employ illegal foreigners in their, sometimes when they get injured at work, they claim through REF. You understand? Illegally so. And it's exploitation and abuse of state resources. And in order for us to stop, con people abusing state resources, we have to tighten our laws.
Sure.
And I think the Minister of Transport will get support if she can go and table this matter. It's very easy. You know, Colin Lizalo has been working on this thing since he joined RAF. It's over 2 years now. Mm. He has been working on this matter. Stop going to court. I'm glad they lost the appeal. Then they can go to Parliament and review the act. Mm. And look, I don't have anything with people coming from other countries to our country and getting injured. That's not the issue. Mm. The issue is it's unjust and it's unfair to South Africans.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, you know, let's actually we'll come back to it. Let's talk foreign policy. What's on your mind regarding foreign policy and the fact that generally I think it's only the DA and the ANC that have clear cut, this is our foreign policy, this is our stance on certain issues.
I actually, after the Minister Lamola was appointed, I still like the fact that he's young, he's 40, and he's a lawyer, you know, he's got a law qualification, he was exposed to. I went to check how is he going to operate with a deputy minister from the Democratic Alliance.
Sure.
And knowing the DA position. So I went to read the two policies of the two political parties, not the national one, the national policy on our foreign policy, I'm very clear with that. And I noticed that actually all other political parties, including the EFF that is talking, you know, Pan-Africanism and continental...
Open borders.
They don't have a solid foreign policy. Lot of political parties. They mention foreign relations here and there in passing, but the DA and the ANC have solid and very clear. And when I say solid, I don't mean I agree with them, but I'm saying it's very clear position. So I went through their policies and read them. And I've noticed how they also differ. They differ, you know, with, for example, relation the East and the West. I mean, we know the position of the Democratic Alliance when it comes to Israel and Russia and Ukraine
and the
U.S. And we know how they attempted several times to follow the U.S. federal system and impose it in South Africa. That's why they are supporting the Cape Zit, you know, that Cape Town. They are federal. ANC is not a federal, it's a national. They're subscribing to a national. We also know how the ANC feels about BRICS and their relation with BRICS member states, which is getting bigger and bigger and you know, stronger. The AGOA, you know, the American Africa Free Trade Agreement, as well, and vis-a-vis the African Free Trade Agreement.
Sure.
They differ dismally. So I was sitting and wondering, how are these people going to now take a national policy, which is a little bit aligned to the ANC, because the ANC has been governing the country all along. How is the deputy minister of DERCO or international relations is going to support a national cause on issues that are actually against the policy position of a political party that deployed him to government. How is Minister Lamola and his deputy going to sit in an office and say, we do not agree? Remember, Lamola comes with a bag full of international cases, you know, victorious cases regarding Israel against Palestine. How is he going to sit with the minister? Because remember, one of the two deputies will be responsible for Middle East affairs. They normally divide it that way. In the past, we used to have Minister Aziz Pahad delayed, you know, to focus because he was a specialist in that. So clearly, the DA deputy minister is not going to get that role to can focus on Middle East issues. What role will he get? Probably they will give him the Americas. Will the African National Congress and the president become happy that the DA deputy minister is dealing with the American relations when we know what happened with the American ambassador, when we know that the DA
went running to America.
And they went into the U.S. to address the Senate or the lower house of the Senate, asking them to come and, you know, look at the elections and the relation between Russia and South Africa. We remember the
Didn't they even borderline jeopardize AGOA?
Yeah, at some stage it was a very serious. So that is going to be a challenge. I wish before they come and conduct themselves in a dirty and clumsy way in the media and to the international community, they must sort it out. One of the first things I would do if I was Ronald Lamola, the minister, is to try and take my two deputies, and they used to have in the past ambassadors of South Africa abroad meeting once a year after the cabinet Lokota. That is, was sitting this week as well. They will call all ambassadors to give them marching orders. So in order to prepare them, because you do get ambassadors who come from opposition parties or from the business sector, to give them marching orders to say, this is the country's policy. When Minister so-and-so from the DA or from EFF or whoever, you will have to draw this line. If you want to push the policy position of your political party, you will have to go and table it in the cabinet meeting. And get, you know, converse your colleagues, your cabinet ministers, to support your position. If you fail, you will have to go. You have to draw the line. And it's going to be very challenging on how they are going to conduct themselves, you know, internationally. I'm going to watch that one and follow. But look, they sounded matured people. If they put their egos aside and their political party logos aside, I think they can drive. We've got a very good foreign policy. It needs to be tweaked here and there, but we are one of the countries that has a very good foreign policy. But also fresh, I'll throw my diplomatic cap away. This stance of South Africa of saying we are a non-what, we are in the middle, you know, threat setter, we don't take sides when it suits us, I don't think it's a wise position. It is good that when there's a war to observe, but if you are a human being and you see two people fighting and killing each other, observing is not a good thing.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Especially if you're about justice.
Yes.
And if you're anti-injustice.
Exactly. Exactly. So our foreign policy does not talk to our Bill of Rights to some extent, which talks justice, as you say. We have to move away from non-aligned and what. We have to align. We have to take a position like we did in the Palestine case. We did it very late. We have been talking about Palestine since Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela's era. But look at when did we implement it? At the tail end of the sixth administration. Why? And when our constitution and our Bill of Rights allowed it. So the constitution is the centerpiece of the laws in the country, must inform other laws that we have, like our policies that we have. Our foreign policy must be strengthened. It's a good policy, but it needs to be strengthened.
Absolutely.
So that we can have positions.
Speaking of tail ends of administrations, let's go to the UK and France. What's been happening there in terms of polls and transfer of power and
look,
stuff?
Who went first? France went first.
Yeah, I think Macron, is it Macron? Macron.
Yes. Emmanuel Macron.
Yeah, I mean, he boldly risked everything.
Yeah.
But also, he's the bold guy, though. I think in the history of France, we haven't seen anyone bolder than this in a while.
He's a risk taker. He doesn't mind to take risks.
Yes.
And I think that's what costed him elections, especially the labor law battles towards the end of his term. But France is. They don't have a government, actually. I don't know how long it will take. They must go in a coalition.
Sure.
And there's no outright winner there as well.
But like many thought Macron was taking such a big risk, he's going to lose.
Look, he still only just made it. Yeah, he just made it. So it's going to be hard 4 years for him because of the margins.
Sure.
They are going to give him a lot of tough time. So he must look for a partner in order to govern. He must look for a partner in some of those. But, you know, also political parties in France, like in the UK, is the extremist. It's like extreme right and there's center and extreme left. And now if you are Macron and you are in the center, and you look for partners, are you going right or are you going left? And I think that's the challenge he's faced with. So if you look around the world, actually, Germany, France, not only in Europe, in Asia as well, in Latin America, every country is going on coalition. There's no outright winners. It shows that the people are divided in the nations. You know, some are center, some are right, some are left. But in the UK, shock, the Labour Party is back. You know, after so many years, they won. They, you know, again, there's no outright majority there. But you know, the UK politics, what was interesting, they went into elections. Okay, it's a small country with a very tiny population. They went into elections. The elections were completed by Friday night, Saturday night. On Sunday, the cabinet was sitting.
Yeah.
You understand? And it shows how a well-oiled machinery works, and they've been doing this. But coincidentally, I went to look at the history of the UK when the Labour Party came back into power. And I'm happy for them. I'm happy for the Labour Party. Do you know that every 6 days in the world, there's a country somewhere that is celebrating Independence Day from the UK. Every 6 days, you can see how the British had colonized the world from east to west, north to south. They colonized almost the entire world.
Yeah.
You know, every 6 days, there's a Independence Day from where? From United Kingdom or England. And I think the Labour Party is going to try and rebuild friendship with the former colonizers. The Commonwealth Movement.
The former colonies.
Yes.
Yeah.
The former colonies, yes.
Yeah.
The Commonwealth, which was created by the Queen to remote control and manage former colonies.
I was going to say.
It did not work.
In the bigger scheme of things, do we really benefit from the Commonwealth?
No, we are wasting money and membership there.
Maybe apart from where your passport allows you a visa-free entry into Commonwealth countries, like what are the other benefits in the bigger scheme of things?
We don't even anymore visa-free entry to the UK. There's no benefits in the Commonwealth. It was just a creation of the Queen of England, and I wish that the Commonwealth has died with the Queen. And there's a new, you know, agenda in the world now, and you know whether it's bilateral or multilateral bodies. And anyway, there are countries that joined the Commonwealth later, and Mozambique is one of them, who were not colonies of the UK. So even the intended purpose, it lost its meaning along the lines. There are so many multilateral forums or organizations that we belong to, and they're costing us a lot of money. I just saw it as a organization that has parties that you can, you know, go celebrate those who were co-opted by the Queen of England to go and meet and have tea with the Queen once you come into power. I think South Africa should leave the Commonwealth. It doesn't add value to us. It actually, if you look at it, we didn't revolutionize it. We should have refused to belong to the Commonwealth because it was part of the unjust system. And I said, how do you oppress me in Ghana and Zimbabwe and this, and after that you bring us, come here, my kids, sit on the table with me, let's have tea. We should have rejected, when we took over in 1994, we should have rejected the Commonwealth. But again, it was the ANC. You know, I've criticized the ANC to say their leader that we love, O.R. Tambo, was exiled in London. What do we expect? But also, all the ANC leaders, even those that I like, Every time they come into power, the first thing they would do, they will jump Botswana, Lesotho, even Zambia, where they were exiled, even Angola, where they had military camps, and go and visit the Queen in England. You understand? It has been a practice from Mandela today that they will all go and pay homage to the Queen of England, the former colonizer. So, yeah. I think we are going to see changes with the Labour Party leading in the UK. And let's hope that France and Germany and others, which haven't formed governments, and at least we have outclassed them. I hardly praise President Ramaphosa. But he outclassed the supposed to be champions of democracy by forming a GNU at a speed that no other country has done.
In record time.
Yes, yeah. Record time. No other. Whether it will work, it's another story. But in less than a month after the election, the GNU was formed, while other countries are battling. Some countries go up to 2 years. You know, Turkey was 2 years without a real government because they couldn't agree. But it also shows that South Africa has talent. South Africa has people in various political parties with skills and that can lead the country. Unfortunately, they've been misleading so far. But if you are misleading, you have capabilities of doing the right thing. It's for them to just go and do the right thing and lead this country. You know, let this ship sail to the right direction for a change.
Absolutely. And I think on that note, our ship has reached our port.
Oh, okay.
Where do we get a hold of you?
Botsangm@gmail.com and on 082-485-9100. That's official line. Mm-hmm. And then on social media, I'm on handles. All of them, they're the same, @Botsangm.
And the new book, how far are we?
Remember, you know, I thought about it this week. The new books, there's two of them.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for my Labour Matter date is out in court to end,
okay,
because it has an impact on publishing the other book. It's ready, and the other one, I don't know why I'm sitting. No, I'm looking for fans.
I hope you're not like OJ and you're going to publish if I did it.
No. I will publish it fresh. It's going to be very soon. Actually, sometimes next week, I'm going to send a circular out on my social media.
That's dope.
I want to appoint youngsters between the age of, say, 6 and 16 or 18, I must still decide who can do the graphic for me for the books.
Okay.
I will pay them for that.
Okay.
To say, give me a 10-year-old child, let them draw. I'll give a story,
sure,
and then let the youngsters, then I'll just choose one or two, and then for both the books, I want to plow back in that manner to somebody dope. Young. Even if the person is maybe at high school or preparing to go to varsity, their registration fee will come from me. Then I'm going to publish. And let me tell you, one of them, it's dope, as you would say. This is a book based on the true story of what happened in my life from when I joined the Agency of Transport to today.
Oh, wow.
And it's focusing on government administration.
Sure.
How monies have been
sent. Or its lack thereof.
Yes. So, because I am putting on material evidence there. You know, people have been asking, but why were you fired? You know, you always get fired. And I'm putting it in the book. Okay. Like I did with my biography.
Yes, sir.
So I'm putting it in there. But one has to also be careful that I'm planning to go back to work. And, you know, some of the things I can't say and publish them against the employer. So I'm working on those legal technicalities.
Okay.
But again, if it's public monies, the public has to know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I hope before the end of this year, both books will be out.
Great stuff. Thank you so much, brother man.
Thanks, Fresh.
Nothing
thanks
but love and respect for you.
Thank you. Thanks, my brother.
Yes, sir. Botsang Modimo Memuyilwa is back again next week for another installment of Politics, coming to you from Amped Studios, downtown Jersey. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. You can email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Trevor and his crew from Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography. Shout out to Otis the Flow Fraser for all of the imaging and to our executive producer, Kelezo Modisa King. Till next week, have an incredible WOW week in spite of yourselves.